The question is, what do we mean by attachments in relationships? That's the question I want to ponder today. And also, how do we come to, quote, attach, end quote? So the situation for us human beings is that infants are born with a capacity to experience, right? They can experience the attitudes and the actions of their caregivers. And this continues to develop throughout life. And we humans are genetically programmed to survive, and babies are dependent on
Right,
adults.
so they have to attach to those adults around them.
Yes, it's programmed in our DNA for survival's sake. And so babies need to be in close proximity to their caregivers in order to be protected. And we learn from the get-go how it is we need to be with our providers, our
In order to
caregivers.
get them to hang out with us and be attached to us.
Yes, in order for them to accept us so that we can maintain that bond and so that we can continue to get the nurturing we need so we have our well-being intact. So, through the course of our lives, adults, we adults, have developed relational styles. That is how it is we relate to others, to our own selves, our own reactions to the world, and all of the situations that we are in. And this has gone on from early childhood experiences of maintaining those ties and what was modeled for us. Of course, through extenuating circumstances like new experiences, exposure to other significant people and programs, I was thinking of the debate program, for example, in school, we adapt, we acquire new skills because of the new experiences, but we are profoundly impacted by those early
Sure.
relational styles. And understanding attachment and the categories that I'm going to explain that we can fall into really helps us understand what sometimes people regard as symptoms of distress, like depression, anxiety, and anger. And so rather than just look at ourselves sometimes as we have these symptoms and where they come from, it's really good to, I think, to see that some of those symptoms occur because of our style of
They're
attaching.
part of patterns that we've established.
Yes, and we go to them in order to survive experiences with human beings. Understanding how you and others attach or connect can open up possibilities for improving intimacy.
Sure. I mean, if you gain sort of conscious awareness, at least, of how you approach things, when something doesn't work, you have the chance to get in there and tinker with it and try a new style.
Right, and conscious is the key word, and mindful, that's another buzzword that I think we all have been exposed to recently.
It's better than mindless.
It sure is. That's pivotal because if you can be conscious, you can tweak your behavior and adjust it. But that's a very hard thing to do when you're struggling, and I will explain.
Sure.
And so the first attachment that is most pleasant to talk about is secure attachment. And secure attachments occur in relationships when babies and children are getting consistent, direct, loving, and acknowledgement for their states of being. This doesn't mean perfectly happening all of the time, that the parent is always there. In fact, that wouldn't even be good because we need to learn about what's called optimal frustration and how to deal with that. But if the consistent way, the consistent approach to a child's needs is one of inquiry, gentleness, loving, joy, then that baby grows up expecting that more or less in their environment. And the child feels and thrives off of the enthusiasm, the patience, the attunement, and empathy that they get. And children then learn that relationships have an advantage, that being in close proximity to a parent and to others helps them, especially when they are distressed. They learn that they can be soothed and that they can soon come to expect that they and others can cope. And they learn how to self-regulate their own states of tension. So this is modeled. They learn to do it, and they learn that they can be successful in intimacy, in close sure. proximity.
Right. It works.
It works. And they learn that to extend compassion and tolerance is a positive option for them.
Mm-hmm.
So children learn also then that exploration away from their primary relationship is possible and desirable because they have confidence, which was nurtured over thousands of moments of parents trying to get their meaning.
And they know they can return to that as well, so they have a secure base from which to explore the world.
Exactly, right? And that is the phrase. And an example that I was going to give is that a toddler and her mom visit the mom's friends for the first time for this toddler. And this is basically a caring couple, and mom gently introduces her baby, and baby sits down and is playing with a doll. And people are interacting with the baby, and things are going well. And then shortly, mom gets up to use the restroom.
And baby looks around and says.
Baby looks around, and baby looks a little surprised, and mom is a little reassuring, walks away, and baby stares and sort of cranes her neck mm-hmm. as mom mm-hmm. closes the door behind her. And she looks apprehensive, but the friends engage her. She's a little hesitant, but then she plays.
Mm-hmm.
And when mom returns, she's really happy.
Right, sure, sure.
And she takes her doll and pokes it out and smiles, and they hug.
Mm-hmm.
So this just proves what you just talked about. Through a secure base, exploration is
right.
possible.
And a new thing isn't terrifying.
Right.
The kid goes, oh, this is a little odd, and how is this going to go? And then as soon as the other adults come in and reassure the kid, then it's goes smoothly.
Right. But the interesting and unfortunate thing is that for babies who grow up with insecure attachments that are consistent, not once in mm-hmm. a while, because even the secure child is going to feel insecure once in a while, but with consistent insecure attachments, ambivalence, anxiety, avoidance, in their relational mm-hmm. experiences with their parent, that same baby is not going to have that same reaction when the parent leaves
sure.
the room. And it's really interesting. I've seen research films of this particular vignette that mm-hmm. I just gave. And the children who are insecure, anxious, or avoidant, or ambivalent, they, when their parent leaves the room, some of them appear to be disconnected, and they don't recognize through their behavior, they are not showing that they have any feeling about the parent leaving.
Got it.
Some of them are so distressed that they can't be soothed.
Mm-hmm.
I've even seen in the worst cases where the parents are very traumatized and very disorganized, I've seen toddlers walk toward their parent and then walk away backwards. Because it's kind of like they don't know, should they stay or should
mm-hmm.
they go?
Mm-hmm.
So these patterns follow us into adulthood.
Sure.
And the good news, of course, is that once, as you said, we become conscious, we can change it. And so adults, unlike babies, hopefully are aware that in relationships they have options. That once you feel within yourself ambivalence or anxiety, once you're aware that you happen to be vulnerable at a particular time, you can check in and modify your reaction, calm yourself down, mm-hmm. soothe yourself down.
Take a breath.
And those breaths
Take two.
Are good. Take two. You can also pause before you impulsively make a decision where you are analyzing somebody's intention before you really mm-hmm. fully hear them.
Jumping to conclusions, right.
Yes. You can share your awareness sometimes with the other person mm-hmm. as to how you're feeling. You can choose not to open up if you're uncomfortable or if you sense that the other person is unavailable, even if you don't understand why.
Mm-hmm.
So you can consider where they're at, maybe in the midst of something, maybe they're unable to give more. But that really comes from, as you said, being conscious, which is not easy when you are preoccupied
mm-hmm.
with unresolved trauma or some acute experience in your life, like current loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking of an example of, let's say, back to the parent and baby. So let's say a parent is considering a lot, an experience they've had, like a loss of their own parent, and the baby needs them. Mm-hmm. That parent might have suddenly a faraway look in their eye and be unavailable. And if the parent picks up on the child's cue of being agitated, the parent can then self-correct.
And tune back in. Right.
Absolutely. So to go over what are some of the things that you can do when you're tuned out is, first of all, you need to know that it's not by intellectual understanding of these concepts that I'm talking about that are going to create change. It's not just an intellectual thing, although some analysis helps mm-hmm. you get there. So you really need to feel your way into it and practice the art of attunement, which we talked about last week. Attunement to your emotional state and to that of the people around you. That's a first step. And then another step is developing ways to soothe yourself, such as the deep breathing, pausing, restraining impulsive reactions, staying in the present. So we all have the potential to react with anticipation, and we can lose perspective of the other person. So if you find yourself reacting defensively, slow down, try to understand yourself and that other person in the present reaction. We're going to be wrapping it in a moment, but I just wanted to share with listeners, I was struck by a song by Burt Bacharach recently, the song, What Do You Get When You Fall in Love?
You get another chance to blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
you wish you did. But in his song, every single stanza is a problem. You get a guy with a pin to burst your bubble. You get enough games to catch pneumonia, on and on. He's full of anticipation. So on that note, maybe we can leave anticipation at the wayside today and take a breath and tune in.